Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. It is a Sunday afternoon and the Hornets have lost a game again. However, I'm feeling pretty chipper about it, even though it was a blowout. And it was the last home game for the Hornets. Why? Because the Hornets remain in control of their destiny. If they lose the next game, they are a bottom five team. Michael, is that what you were thinking that whole game?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with five games left to go, I said that they would need to go 0-5 in order to secure this fifth position, which has actually been a very lucky position for the most part recently in the draft lottery. It gives them a decent shot at a top three pick, a good shot at a top five pick, and then most likely worst case scenario is the sixth pick. So, you know, it's something that they've really had to step up to the plate, improve their tank game, which they've done. Some other teams have had to help out as well, most notably Detroit. And, you know, those teams have stepped up to help us out. So we're within reach. I could see the finish line. All we need is another loss at Dallas on Wednesday. And, you know, we got what we've been hoping for over the past couple weeks.
Yeah, as long as the Hornets win, and I mean, or as long as they lose and win, and Detroit and Sacramento. I mean, if they both win, then the Hornets get another game of space. But I don't want to count on that. And honestly, having read your missing piece this weekend about good old Shabazz Muhammad, I mean, top five. I don't want to get stuck with Shabazz. I mean, that would have to. I mean, maybe if that happens in the draft, maybe we should make that our new blog name when we switch over. Stuck with Shabazz.
Stuck with Shabazz. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting with the draft because I keep touting this big five. I believe in it, but looking back, I can't remember a draft that didn't have a guy who was, you know, supposed to go top five at this point, fall out and not have a guy who, you know, came from the other way. I mean, Wesley Johnson came out of nowhere, not nowhere, but he wasn't going to be a top five pick. He shoots up to four. Deion Waiters comes from, you know, at this time last year, most were saying a mid first rounder. He shoots up to four. Damian Lillard shot up to six, you know, so right now it seems clear as day that there's a top five, and you know, if the Hornets were stuck at six, then it would be really tough. But every single year you have guys slip back a spot or two, or sometimes more, and you have guys shoot up from out of nowhere. So really, I just want the greatest percentage chance at a top pick, just for as many options as possible. Because the way Monty was talking after today's game, you know, it might be the case that the Hornets look to trade it for a veteran. I don't know how much he wants another 19 or 20-year-old on this team.
Right. Although, I got to say, there's a couple of those 19 or 20-year-olds who I'd be really happy to see in a Hornets uniform.
Well, you don't have to coach them, so.
That's true. I don't have to coach them. And, you know, I'm happy about them now, and you get all excited about them now. But then when they're actually playing games and you realize, what you know, they're not having the impact you hope for, it would be kind of tough. So since our last podcast, the Hornets have lost every game. Do you want to talk about each one of these? Did we learn anything in these games other than Marcus Thornton continues to sweep the leg on the Hornets whenever he can?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe you could put together the Sacramento and Dallas game. I think the Lakers game was a little different. I thought they really competed well in that game. You know, I thought they really fought. I thought Kobe just had a fantastic stretch in the beginning of the fourth quarter, you know, although it was against just all reserves and just an awful lineup full of guys who, you know, probably shouldn't be getting much playing time in this league. But he kind of helped them pull away in the fourth quarter. But I thought overall a ton of effort. I thought that the Lakers had really no answer for Anthony Davis when the Hornets chose to go to him, especially in transition. I feel if the Hornets had, you know, even an average point guard with some speed, you put Darren Collison on this team, and I think Anthony Davis would have had 20 fast break points alone in this Lakers game. Just the way he was running the floor, it was beautiful. I thought Gordon was super, super aggressive, which I like, you know, when he attacks. So I thought there were a couple things to take out of this game that I liked. And Xavier Henry could foul well. So that's it.
Right. So, yeah, and that you bring up Xavier. I mean, the first half when Kobe Bryant was kind of being kept out of it a little bit, Eric Gordon was on him for a lot of that.
Right.
And when Kobe Bryant went off, poor old Xavier Henry. And I actually felt for a little while Xavier Henry was doing a pretty good job with Bryant. And then Bryant started attacking him, and you realized, yeah, there's nothing Xavier can do to stop this guy. And yeah, so...
Well, he could foul him.
He could foul him. That's right.
Yeah. Kobe did miss a free throw in the game, so that's a half a point he helped protect. I thought Davis was awesome at times offensively, made some, you know, a lot of impact. As we've seen, I think we expected the block shots, but to me, the steals have been, you know, the revelation for Davis, just so long able to get in those passing lanes. But we also saw the deficiencies when Pau Gasol, most notably, had Davis on his back. He was able to just push him under the basket with almost, you know, with Davis giving almost no resistance. So, you know, we definitely saw in this game a lot of great things, but we also saw that he's a 20-year-old that's super skinny and, you know, is going to need to develop some size in order to really have the well-rounded game and the overall impact of a top-five player in the league, which I think we both hope he'll be in 2-3 years.
Right. And, I mean, and like you said, it was obvious. Pau Gasol was just taking him to town in the paint. There wasn't anything Davis could do. His agility wasn't helping him because Pau's so careful and knows how to get his shots off so they can't be blocked. And I mean, it was interesting. Monty didn't just pull Davis, which is what he would have done earlier in the season. He would have pulled him and put Anderson in. Instead, he just rotated Anderson in as power forward, let Anderson get beat up by Pau for a while, and Anderson did a better job holding his ground. But kept Anthony Davis out there for a lot of the game, playing next to Anderson as center, which is kind of what we've been hoping to see. I enjoyed every minute of it. Anderson was, you know, he was able to handle slower players, and most teams don't have pretty quick front court players. Dwight Howard in that game, though, did you feel like he was just dominating the Hornets?
Yeah, I thought that he absolutely destroyed Lopez, and it just made me go back to when the Hornets had that 27-point lead in New Orleans over the Lakers, and Monty kept saying, you know, he had to leave Lopez in because he didn't want to put Davis on Howard. And, I mean, to me, that's a fine strategy if one guy does a better job at slowing somebody down than the other. But obviously Lopez can't give any resistance to Howard. So my thing is make it as hard as possible for Howard on the other end. I think Davis does that more than, Lopez. So moving forward, this idea that to cover a 7-footer, you need a 7-footer. I still think that I would rather have the offensive versatility out there and understand that a guy like Dwight is always going to get his. My job is to come as close to matching that or give him problems on the other end.
So the one thing, I agree that Dwight Howard is just, there wasn't anything Lopez was going to do to him. But there wasn't really anybody on our team who was going to give him much trouble. The question I had, though, is, when Meta World Peace came onto the court, why didn't the Hornets just, like, drop everything to attack that guy?
I don't know.
I mean, he's coming off of a knee surgery, and it's been 12 days since he had the surgery. There's no way he's going to have the speed to stop anyone.
But what are you going to do, clear out for Aminu? Give Henry the ball to take it to the basket. So when
can't you run a switch and get Gordon on him or something? Yeah. I mean,
then they would just leave Aminu or Henry or whoever you have at small forward to double. I mean,
it's true.
It's just, yeah, that would be an amazing strategy if Monty had the players that I'm sure he would like on this team. But
well, Xavier Henry could have driven and gotten fouled and missed the free throws.
Right, and then we had a chance for an offensive rebound, which put us real close to the basket. Yeah, I guess that would be how I draw it up. But, yeah, I thought there was a lot of effort in this game. I thought it was a game in which, there was even times, like I said, in that fourth quarter where it looked like the Lakers were pulling away. You thought they were just going to go, run out to a 15-20-point lead and be over, and the Hornets would come right back and tie it up. I mean, they really made the Lakers work for everything in this game, and I think as we go on later in the week, it's a little different Hornets team that we saw. But in this game, at least, I thought there was some good positives to take out of it, and I love Gordon is starting to turn it over more now, but, the season's lost. I don't care. I like that he's being more aggressive and starting to get himself back into that role. Whether it's for us or to show, some other general managers that he's getting closer to old form. So I just liked him attacking, and this game just really made me feel like, gosh, I cannot wait till we get a point guard who could push the pace, because Anthony Davis is going to be able to just terrorize teams on fast breaks.
Right. Now, there wasn't anyone who's keeping up with him. It's like watching a gazelle. So, and the reason why I think the Hornets played so well in this game is I think they were trying to upset LA. I think they like kind of looked at the schedule and they said, it doesn't matter what happens in Sacramento. Doesn't happen with matter with Los Angeles. It's stopped mattering what happens with Dallas. So they're looking at their schedule. They're kind of trying to come up with things to inspire them to play well. And they're like, we could really mess with LA tonight. So let's do what we can to try to make that happen.
Yeah.
So they played with energy, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's going to be close. The Lakers had an impressive victory tonight against San Antonio, but I do think that that game could have been the difference between the Lakers playoff berth or missing it. So there was a lot to play for over the next two. I mean, I wouldn't mind just lumping these two together with one exception. The one thing I want to say about the Sacramento game is in that, God, I'm trying to remember how long of a period of time it was. At least immediately when Anthony Davis went down and they went to commercial, like, I hadn't been that sick as a Hornets fan in such a long time. I mean, if he goes down right there and it's the worst case scenario, he tore his ACL or MCL or both or whatever, then we're just giving up on next year, and then we're just hoping he comes back. Like, it would have just, I can't imagine how horrible, well, I mean, I can't imagine, because I was imagining for those couple of minutes how horrible of a scenario that was, and it would just would have made me absolutely sick to my stomach. I mean, he's got a sprained MCL. He should be fine. He will be fine in less than a month. You know, thank God, but gosh, I mean, just thinking back on it, how morbid, how pointless would everything have seemed if the worst case happened that night?
Yeah, now I'm partly lucky because I watch everything on tape delay, so I was able to fast forward pretty quickly and find out that, you know, he at least walked off the court.
Right.
But I mean, when I saw him grab that knee, both hands, face buried on the ground, I felt like I'd been kicked in the balls, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that, like I said, as much as building a team, I could write these missing pieces, we could talk about all our cap room, get lucky in the lotto, and there's still just this huge component of luck where, yeah, Michael Jordan missed that one, his third season famously, and, you know, but for the most part, I mean, LeBron James has just gone through his career, you know, relatively unscathed. The Oklahoma City Thunder have had, you know, Westbrook, Durant, Ibaka, those guys never go down. Like, there's a huge luck component there when it comes to injuries. And I could just imagine, you know, hearing that Davis will be gone till the middle of next year, having Austin Rivers have been hurt halfway through this year and not playing. Like, it would have just been such a sour feeling going into the off season. As optimistic as a lot of people are now with our draft pick and our cap room and our assets, I think all that would have been thrown out the window had that been the worst case scenario for Davis. So that was the moment that sticks out the most to me. I mean, it was horrible defense. It was a game that I obviously wanted to lose, and I think it'll be the difference, as I wrote in a column, between 5th and 7th in the lottery. I thought it was huge in that respect. But really nothing, you know, specific coming out of this game outside of we really dodged a bullet with that one, because if it would have been the worst, it would have just, all this fresh start with Pelicans and all this excitement about the offseason would have been thrown out the window if Anthony Davis would have missed a huge chunk or maybe even all of next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, there wasn't much else you wanted to really latch on to and remember. I mean, Ryan Anderson going 1 of 6 from downtown. I mean, it was a kind of a painful game, as they were blown out for a lot of it, and before they came back and outscored them by 11 in the final frame to make it look like it's maybe not as bad as it was, but it was pretty bad.
Right. It was a game that Brian Roberts, like I said in the recap, that's the game he's going to thrive in, and Juan Vasquez is just going to struggle. A bunch of, you know, fairly athletic, you know, energetic guards, and Vasquez just seemed lost. And Roberts got in there and, you know, just had the green light and had a solid game. I mean, 20 points on 11 shots, 6 mm-hmm. rebounds, 5 assists. You know, you're just starting to wonder. I know Vasquez put up these amazing stats, you know, at the beginning of the year, basically because somebody had to. But if you took this Brian Roberts right now, transported him back in time to opening night of the season, what would Brian Roberts' numbers look like if he would have been the starter all year? Like, I don't think the gap between him and Vasquez is that big. I think they're both, you know, would be fairly good backups in this league. Neither are starters, and I think that gap has narrowed quite a bit.
Right. Now, you're talking that you want to lump the Sacramento game in with the Los Angeles game.
No, with the Dallas game.
Oh, with the Dallas game. Okay, yeah, there's not much to talk about Dallas. They wanted their beards gone, and the Hornets didn't want to be there.
Yeah, I mean, both games, the reason I lump them is both games are just atrocious defense.
And Sean Marion hitting every hook, flip, shot he usually misses in the world. But, yeah, I mean, there wasn't much in that game. I enjoyed watching Dirk hit 25,000 points. I've always been a fan of Dirk.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really had many problems. I loved when David West put him in his place in the playoff series, but I always thought, you know, for as good as he was a fairly humble guy. He definitely, I mean, we see a lot of these stretch fours now, but when he came into the league and even through the middle part of his career, like he was so rare. Right. And it was such a new dimension that was brought to this game that, you know, that I really appreciate. But yeah, the Sacramento and the Dallas games, just minimal defensive effort and it's quite embarrassing. And I know that it's boring to talk about defense. I know that everybody wants, you know, to go out and get the next exciting wing player who could go off for 30 on a given night or draft the next guy who's, you know, an offensive star that's just a more fun brand of basketball to watch. But you watch the Sacramento game and this Dallas game, and I don't care what you're bringing in here on offense. It's not going to be enough because this defense is absolutely atrocious, and that just it simply has to be the number one priority this summer.
All right. And, I mean, even though the game was different, the Hornets lost that Clippers game because of a complete defensive meltdown in the fourth quarter. They gave up 39 points to the Clippers in the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah, the Clippers scored on their last 11 possessions. I mean, that's...
And it wasn't even... I mean, like you say that, and people are immediately thinking, well, that's Chris Paul. It wasn't Chris Paul. I mean, it was partly Chris Paul, but that team was just running normal sets, and the Hornets were not stopping anything.
Yeah.
And when they did manage to stop it, they gave up an offensive rebound.
Yeah, I mean, that was a game I was terrified. That game looked like, you know, that the Hornets had ruined the tank. I mean, they're up 10 with 6:21 to go in the game. With, you know, under 7 minutes left to go, they're up 10. They had been up for, you know, a large portion of that game, took the lead about halfway through the third quarter, and then just kept growing it. And, you know, it looked like they were going to win that game. But, again, they give up 39 points in the fourth quarter. And like you said, it wasn't really Chris Paul, and it wasn't anything amazing that the Clippers did on the offensive end. It's just, you know, people say, where are you going to go to for buckets? Usually on a team, well, where are you going to go to for stops? Like, you look at this team, especially with Anthony Davis obviously not playing in this game, like, really, what's your ideal scenario as far as, you know, a team going to a certain player and you having someone to put on him to get a stop? Who's your stopper on this team? I mean, I don't know how. It doesn't matter what kind of leaps that Davis and Gordon make next year, getting, you know, Gordon getting back to himself on the offensive end and Davis becoming an improved player. If nothing's done about this defense, this team, you know, is going to have another year where they're in the high lottery.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the Hornets dodged another bullet in this game too. They lost by 3. They shot 17 of 32 from the free throw line.
Yeah.
I can't remember another game this season where they earned 32 free throws and still they managed to only hit 17. Like, that's the normal makes they have, 17, but usually they're taking 21.
Yeah. So, some weird guys too. Like, I think both Gordon and Anderson started off 1 for 4 in this game.
Yeah, and even Aminu was missing, and Aminu's a perfectly solid free throw shooter.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. I couldn't figure out what was going on there.
And then Xavier Henry. Oh, no, that's normal.
And then this is perhaps the thing I thought was the funniest. our announcers were dogging Blake Griffin all game long. Did you hear the Hornets announcers or the LA announcers?
I get the Hornets.
They were dogging him. I mean, it was like every time he did something, they're like, he's phenomenal. And when he's open in the open court and dunking, but there's just something missing in his game. Every time they said, oh, that was amazing, great by Griffin, they always had something that they dug at with him. And honestly, I couldn't fault them on that. Griffin does not know his game, or he knows it and doesn't care that he's straying way outside the confines of it. He should not be doing half the things he does out there.
Oh, you mean like taking 2 3-pointers? Yeah, and I mean the criticism is fair because of the spotlight he gets. I mean, you do a bunch of commercials, you get all the attention, you're called, you know, the next great big man in the league, you know, you've got to live up to that. If none of that stuff was happening, I wouldn't see a faulting a guy just to fault him. But people are mistakenly calling this guy a superstar. And, I mean, he's a superstar star highlight reel, but he's not a winning basketball player. I mean, I've read some stuff where, you know, Del Negro says that he lets Griffin take that stuff because – even though he knows it'll be bad now, that they're essentially reps for the long term that'll help him out 3, 4, 5 years from now. I don't know how much I buy that. I think that's solid in theory. But, you know, I'm not buying that long term. And I mean, you know me. I have not liked the guy for quite a while. I'm the one who said that when you factor in cost and price, I would take Ryan Anderson over him, and I'm still not changing that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he has – I remember watching him when he was in that summer league before he messed up his kneecap that one year. And, I mean, you just loved everything on the open court, his power, his ability to pass on the move under the basket. He had, like, definable NBA talents that you knew if he stuck to those, he was going to be a dominant force out there. And you can still see them out there. But he just strays from them way too often.
Right.
And the problem is, Anthony Davis strays to the jumper more often than he should. But he gets decent results from it. Blake Griffin doesn't get decent results when he strays away from what he's good at. So, and then... also, I also had to mention this too. DeAndre Jordan, I don't remember what piece we were talking about before. It was like there was a mention in about trading for Bledsoe, and that maybe we'll have to take DeAndre Jordan's crappy contract back with it. And there were commenters in it, several of them, who were saying, "Well, I don't really think DeAndre Jordan's contract is crappy. The dude is horrible." and yeah, I mean, this game he was more horrible than usual. But the dude is horrible. Let's just get that. I mean, I would not give him Robin Lopez's contract.
Yeah.
And, again, our announcers were dogging him so bad because they were like, well, he's not an offensive player, which means he should be out there as a defensive player, but Robin Lopez just scored on him 4 straight times.
Yeah.
So he's not really doing that either. And there was like one defensive play where they kept showing it where Brian Roberts dribbles down courts, whips the ball, you know, through two people to Lopez for a layup. And if you watch it, Jordan has the wonderful, brilliant idea that, okay, well, Willie Green is meeting Brian Roberts on the perimeter, you know, 25 feet from the basket. Robin Lopez is running right next to me. I'm actually physically touching him. We're in transition. I'm going to stop and go help Willie Green defend Brian Roberts, even though Brian Roberts has stopped running and is dribbling in place. And there's nobody else anywhere near the basket. I'm like, how could anyone possibly think that this is what you should be doing defensively? What are you going to do to Brian Roberts if you go out and try to help? There's nothing DeAndre Jordan's going to do to stop him from getting where he wants to go. It was just, I mean, the guy's got, like, the basketball IQ of an earthworm.
Yeah. I mean, I would want nothing to do with him, and that's why I said, I mean, I I think the Clippers would be happy to unload him. But, I mean, speaking of Bledsoe, we could talk again about how much we would love him. But I'd like to go the other way. Like, I've watched a lot of Clippers basketball, and especially lately, they have been going to a Chris Paul, Eric Bledsoe backcourt in crunch time, and it's phenomenal. I mean, is it possible that they just say, you know, instead of trying to trade Bledsoe, we just make him our starting shooting guard in this league that, you know, is going smaller and smaller, and, you know, we just keep him this year, even if Chris Paul resigns?
That is the smartest thing they could do. My feeling, though, is that Vinny Del Negro does not have the imagination to be able to do that. Because he should be doing that already.
Right.
I mean, I like Jamal Crawford as much as the next guy when he's scoring, but, I mean, there's no reason. Again, this is like a recurring statement I've said about this guy a million times. There's no reason why Willie Green should be getting 18 minutes in this game. I mean, Willie Green's not even bigger than Eric Bledsoe. Maybe he's got a half an inch on the guy. Eric Bledsoe should have gotten all 18 of those minutes.
Yeah, and it would have probably been a blowout. I mean, Eric Bledsoe, 19 minutes, he's a plus 15 in this game. So.
And this team, I mean, Caron Butler, as much as people love him, unless he's hitting the three, he's a useless basketball player. He's a bad defender. I mean, this team, the Clippers are a team that is actually good when they're playing Barnes, Bledsoe, Paul, and Griffin. And they can get by with Jordan or Hollins or even Odom at the center if they're running those guys together. Other than that, I mean, this team does not have enough two-way ability to be an effective basketball team. And they're out. I'm 100% convinced they're out in the first round this year.
So it looks like they will get home court against Memphis. You're saying if that's the 4-5, even if the Clippers have home court, they're out.
No, Memphis is taking them down.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree. Like, what do you do with Gasol? You're going to have to leave Jordan in the game. Like, I agree with you. If they could play a team that they could go small with and put Blake at the 5 and, you know, and go smaller, I think they'd be fine. But I don't think they could do that against Memphis. I think that's a bad matchup for them. And I agree. I don't see them getting past the first round, and I still find it fascinating, not just because I'm a New Orleans fan, but just overall, find it fascinating to know what Chris Paul is going to do, because how can you say you want out because you want to win, you want out because you want to win, you want out because you want to win, and then re-sign with a team that is actually going backwards this summer if they do lose in the first round to the Grizzlies? To me, it's an absolutely fascinating storyline.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in any sort of contest with the Grizzlies, Chris Paul will probably be good for a couple wins. But I can't say I can think Blake Griffin will carry them to an additional 2 wins, and there's nobody else here who's going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be an interesting series, and as much as I love Bledsoe, I don't think Del Negro will be back next year, and I just think, you know, if the Clippers have any kind of brain at all, they look at that roster and they see that Bledsoe isn't making anything. They still have his rights, and he's not a backup point guard. He's a guy you could put next to Chris Paul in this new league. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if they move him, but gosh, I hope they do to us.
So I don't see any reason for us to really talk about the next game that are coming up. We have one more game left on the docket. We've got a couple guests that are coming on in a brief moment, but I did get a couple calls from people who listen to the podcast. So here is the first one, and this is one we've talked about a lot, but let's get your opinion on this.
Hey, guys, this is Jared. I know you guys have talked before in the podcast and in different articles. But what's your opinion on, would you rather see Anthony Davis play center or spend more minutes at power forward and bring Ryan Anderson off the bench? I know one of the big things that we could have done in this offseason is bring in Pekovic, which I would love. But, I mean, what's your guys' opinion? Would you rather bring in someone like Pekovic or would you rather keep Anthony Davis at center?
All right, so that's the question, and I'll let you go first. AD at center next year?
I don't know about next year, and I don't see, it just puts so much pressure on him. Like, we know he could play the power forward. Like, we absolutely know that, and he could be effective there. You know, if you're sliding him over to center long term, then to me that puts a lot of pressure on him to rebound, because if you're doing that, you're only doing that because you want to put Ryan Anderson in the starting lineup. And then, you know, right there, you're going to have a below average rebounder on the defensive end. You have Eric Gordon, and, you know, it's the same thing there. So at that point, you're putting a lot of pressure on Davis to be kind of this rim protector and, you know, lone interior defender and, you know, also a guy who's just controlling the boards, where if you put him next to a guy like, I mean, specifically Pekovic, you know, Davis has a slightly different role, but you're kind of taking the pressure off him. You're also, you know, leaving Ryan Anderson in a six-man role, which, you know, as we've seen, maybe not with the Heat, but almost every other contender over the last couple of years, they had a pure scorer off the bench as a six-man, whether it's, you know, Ginobili or Jason Terry with Dallas or Leonardo Barbosa when the Suns were playing well. I mean, like, that's a powerful thing to have coming off the bench. So my answer would be is if we could get Pekovic, I'm taking him, and I'm leaving Davis at the four. But if we're talking about somebody like Lopez or someone of that caliber, I'd be fine with moving Davis, you know, to the center position and trying to find a point guard or a small forward who could handle some of those other things, particularly the defensive glass.
I mean Pekovic is the guy he brings up, and I think Pekovic is the one you have. He is the ideal for Anthony Davis right now. I absolutely don't want Anthony Davis playing most of his minutes at center. I don't mind him rotating in there and taking like 15 minutes or maybe even 20 minutes a game at center. I don't want him to be that position right now. And I really think we need to take the same sort of line that teams like San Antonio and Kevin Garnett and up in Minnesota with Kevin Garnett that teams are taking, took with them. Because I remember very distinctly, even Dirk Nowitzki at one point, both of those guys were playing significant minutes at small forward and at power forward. And they were never considered centers until much later in their career, where they put on a little bulk, they've gotten more savvy, they knew when to pick their spots. Anthony Davis doesn't know how to do any of that yet, and he hasn't put on that weight. You got to keep him at power forward for, I mean, and I mean, we can keep saying when he adds a little weight, but, you know, it's not something that's just going to happen over a couple seasons. He's got to do it over time. So if you can get a big man to play next to him for, you know, three or four seasons, that's perfect. Pekovic is the most perfect of the options that are out there, I think. But, you know, he needs some sort of guy who can take those minutes. And honestly, even if Robin Lopez is traded for something else, I would much rather have Jason Smith starting at center and Ryan Anderson coming off the power forward as the power forward off the bench and AD at power forward starting. I'd rather have Jason Smith have to deal with
it. Yeah, and to me, you don't even have to have clearly defined who's the, I mean, you could get another hybrid 4/5 guy. You know, a lot of times in San Antonio, I have no clue who the power forward is and who the center is, like when you have Duncan and Splitter. I mean, if Splitter was on another team, would you say, oh, that's a traditional center? Or, you know, even the other way, that's a definite power forward. I have no clue. You just have two guys who could play that frontline position, and a similar thing would happen if you brought somebody like J.J. Hickson in. I don't think either Davis or Hickson are pure fives. I think they both could play the five. I think they could both play the four. I think that they could both rebound at an incredibly high rate. Who they cover on defense or what they do defensively depends on matchups, whatever. But, I don't know about the pure position. I'm just thinking as complements. And again, if you have that Davis Anderson front court, that could be a terror offensively, but you better go out and get, you know, either a new shooting guard or, a point guard or small forward that could do some things on the glass that is going to be needed with Anderson at the four.
Yep. All right, so we got another call, and this one, well, really it's kind of depressing, but I'll let you hear it.
Hi, it is Jay Dogon, long-time reader, I love the show. And I want to ask, I know that Eric Gordon is great at driving and all that, and a lot of people don't like it when he takes jump shots. But if he is going to remain a crucial part of the team in the future, shouldn't we hope that he improves his jumper because that's less likely to get him injured?
So there you have it. Do we want him to settle for the jumper? I mean, I guess what he's really asking is, do we think he can improve his jumper? Because it's not a good jumper right now. At least off the dribble, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to me the question sounds like, would you rather an inefficient, overpaid shooting guard who stays on the court or an efficient one that, you know, is off the court for most of the games but always leaves you saying, oh, if he were only healthy, he would be fantastic. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I of course you would want the best of both worlds where – Gordon can keep from getting injured by, you know, playing on the perimeter more and only attacking, once in a while. But I've never seen anything that really makes me believe that this is going to be able to be a huge part of his game. I mean, he is terrific at getting to the basket, using his body, his thick upper body, to be able to bounce off a guy's finish, off the contact, get to the free throw line, whatever. I mean, I'm sure it's great to be able to say, well, what if this guy suddenly gets this brand new fantastic skill set? But I mean, who couldn't we say that for? We could say, what if Vasquez could get foot speed, or what if Aminu could develop a jumper, or, you know, if Lopez could defend guys in the pick and roll. Like, guys are limited because they're limited, and sometimes things change in small ways. But no, I think that if Gordon is going to be the all-star that Monty says he could be as soon as next year, it's going to be because he's the same old Eric Gordon, except he's not getting injured.
Yeah, and I'm also not, I mean, right, I would rather have the Eric Gordon driving, honestly, because I'm not sure Eric Gordon's injuries are caused because he's driving. I mean, even on the perimeter, there's a bunch of contact, and you have to run off of screens, and people are throwing elbows, and you're banging knees with guys. I don't necessarily believe that he's getting his injuries because he goes to the basket. He's getting some bruises and stuff like that, but I wouldn't blame that for the reason why he's been out the past couple seasons as much as he has. So I would just rather have Eric go to the basket, and if he gets hurt, he gets hurt, and, you know, we have him for three more years as the glass shooting guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's there's no ideal in this situation, and I even love – I mean, it's so hard, and it's hard to really argue with anybody's opinion on Eric Gordon, because every opinion – is both justifiable and unjustifiable. Like it's so fascinating to me. I mean, he's had a decent stretch lately, and now you look around our site and other boards, and people are back on board with giving him a chance next year, and almost forget how injury prone he is, and instead see these multiple, you know, these consecutive 20 plus point games, and it's just so difficult, and I just don't know how this gets resolved, not only next year, but over the next 5 to 10. I mean, I would be shocked if Eric Gordon is a Pelican for the next 5 to 10 years, but honestly, I really have no idea how this scenario plays out, but I do know that he's fantastic at getting to the rim when he's healthy, you know, and in the pick and roll. And if he's going to be here and be productive, it's going to be because more because of those things than because of a consistent outside shot.
All right. So, got anything else to chat about before we start bringing on our guests?
No, I mean, just you brought it up a little bit. I mean, are you totally – I remember a couple of weeks ago you said that looking over the numbers, Shabazz was the guy that you were somewhat interested in. I put up my missing piece. I mean, are you totally out on him? Have any interest at all? Where, you know, what – Or could he? You still be persuaded on him one way or the other, depending on workouts and combine results, et cetera?
No, I think I'm out on Shabazz. And, I mean, I like the idea of a competent complementary scorer, or even if he could somehow turn himself into a primary scorer in some ways, because the Hornets need that. But in the end, especially... I think I was persuading myself to settle for Shabazz because I felt the Hornets were settling into like a 7-8 range. But there's no way that if the Hornets are in the top 5, I would ever want to see Muhammad in a Hornets uniform. I think I'm done with Shabazz. I'm sorry. Your article is very thorough about all the things that he does that are good and bad, but enough of it's bad that I don't really want that player.
Yeah. I mean, my biggest thing is I would love to see, because I know after the lottery we'll have our fifth pick or third pick or sixth pick, whatever, tournament. And my plea is just, you know, to talk about him on the court, because, I mean, there's enough weaknesses and pros and cons there to have a very healthy conversation. I mean, I think he could even be the most polarizing guy in this draft, even if you're just talking about strictly on the court stuff, because it's so rare that you see a guy who is phenomenal. I mean, exceptional in two areas and then just that bad everywhere else. I mean, to have, you know, pretty much as many blocks as Muggsy Bogues had in college is ridiculous for a guy with that size, his wingspan and athleticism. So I just think he's such a fascinating prospect, but I feel like, you know, not only when it's with regard to Hornets fans or whatever, I just think 80% of the time I see any fans or NBA lovers talk about Shabazz Muhammad, it's just personality driven and all this speculation, even in that Ford Bill Simmons podcast that you know, I know you listen to, they bring up Shabazz like once or twice and just make jokes about, you know, off the court stuff, when he's such a fascinating guy to talk about with regard to his game on the court and how UCLA's system sometimes inhibit guys and, you know, what, how much does that have to play into it? So I just hope that as we talk about him more and more moving forward, people could just concentrate to the on-the-court stuff, because, frankly, we don't have very much information with the off-the-court stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about that, although I do think that I don't think he'll be the most polarizing guy. That's still, I think, going to be Trey Burke, because there are people who absolutely love Trey Burke, and there you can say no wrong about him. I mean, if you even mentioned that Trey Burke might not be good at something, and they're going to tear your leg off and beat
right,
you with
but it. I mean, when I think of polarizing, I think of both. I don't think that there's anybody who thinks Trey Burke's going to be horrible in a bust. That's why I don't think he's polarizing. I think he's going to be maybe the most talked about because, I see a lot of people, and I get this, I see a lot of people wanting to believe with Trey Burke, and why not? Like, we're all scarred by CP3 leaving, and in some way, we all wish he would stayed. Why not would you want, you know, why wouldn't you want to trick yourself into believing that this next guy could be CP3 and actually want to stay here with Anthony Davis? I could see talking myself into that if, So I think that he might be the most talked about, but I don't think there's going to be many people on the Trey Burke is going to be a bust or head case or locker room cancer. And I think it'll either be a bunch of, you know, people who are just delusional and think he'll be Chris Paul. And then there'll be the other end will be, no, he'll be a top, you know, he'll be a top 12 point guard in this league, but not a consistent all-star.
Right. Okay. So let's go ahead and go grab Grayson, because he will, he gets to come on and talk trades, because I know everybody likes that, and what guys we should be moving out of here, and we'll follow him with Chris True to talk about rebrand. Nice. And now we're joined by James Grayson from Down Under. James, thanks for coming on.
Good night, fellas. How's it going?
So we have off-season coming up here where, I mean, in my book, this is probably the most important off-season. I could see somebody saying it's the next year's off-season, but this year we're looking at possibly as much as $20 million in cap space if they renounce certain players. They've got lots of, you know, assets that they can trade, guys they can maybe bundle to get something. There's the ever-present, what are we doing with Gordon? So let's talk trading here. If you had this roster in front of you, you're Dell Demps, looking at the guys under contract, what is your number one priority as soon as, I mean, before the season even ends? Who are you calling to gauge trade value for right off the bat?
The first player that I would certainly be looking to trade is Eric Gordon. I really think that Dell's going to be looking to see what Eric Gordon is worth right after this season's ended. Just simply because of the fact that they were able to play him in a couple of back-to-backs. He was able to not sustain another injury. And I know we've discussed this over the season and what would happen and what it would mean if he played the last 30 games, and it wouldn't mean a whole lot. But we do know that teams out there value his potential, his scoring ability, his defensive capabilities. I think Dell's going to be looking very heavily towards what Gordon's value is right after this season's ended as priority number one, I think.
I'm sorry, I'm still kind of chuckling to myself there because I could just see that call when he calls some GM and says, hey, we're looking to gauge what you give us for Eric Gordon. He did play a couple back-to-backs this year.
Come on, guys, help us out here. Help us out.
So James, here's mine. I think moving Gordon, if they're going to do it this summer, it's way more dependent on the other team than it is what we're asking for. You got to go out and find a team who's willing to take that risk, you know, both on a guy who gets injured and a guy who could rub teammates the wrong way. I think if you had a gun to my head right now and told me Gordon was going to be traded, and for me to pick the team in the trade, my bet would be the Bulls. Him and Derrick Rose are old, you know, friends and teammates, in AAU. Rose's brother, you know, obviously was out there calling for Chicago to get more help. Jimmy Butler's playing really well as of late. You could put him at small forward. Gordon for Deng, straight up. If you're the Hornets GM, would you do that?
I think Dell would do that in a heartbeat for a number of reasons. Number one, you get your wing defender, the guy that Monty Williams covets, or I know he's coveting heading into this summer. You get a guy who can shoot the ball a little bit, and just somebody who can be a veteran presence within the locker room, I think, is another added thing to it. And you're right about the Bulls being a target. I also throw another team into the mix. I think the Timberwolves are another team to keep your eye on as a team to potentially trade with because of what Kevin Love said last summer about the fact that, you know, he wants to see some progression in terms of the talent that they bring onto their team. So I think that you could potentially get some assets from them. I think that if you're going to trade Eric Gordon, I think you're going to have to surrender another asset or something like that just to sort of, I guess, push the trade in the right direction, just push it along kind of and say, listen, we want to get rid of him. I think that a straight-up trade for those two would would certainly, I don't know if the Bulls would do it, because I think they value game, but I think that those are two teams that you could certainly work something with for Eric Gordon.
So here's my, I mean, I like the idea, of course, of either of those trades, but I just have the feeling that a lot of GMs are just going to be like, no, he's not worth it. You got to give me something great to go with him, or you got to take something from us that maybe is not going to fit you even all that well. So, I mean, teams that I've been thinking about too, like, I mean, if we go to Philadelphia, which has already, they've already proven that they're willing to take risks. So if and they're kind of stuck with Andrew Bynum. I mean, they might take a risk with Eric Gordon as well. I don't know. Maybe it's too much risk for them altogether. But, I mean, if you even go look at Philly's roster, I mean, if what's the best you can get back is Thaddeus Young and Spencer Hawes. Would you make a trade like that, or are you only trading Gordon if you're getting back a decent return that does not destroy your cap?
I think one of the things you have to weigh up, and something that I think is a bit of a bind for a lot of GMs these days, is what's the benefits of financial flexibility versus the benefits of having a guy or a talented player under contract and in your program? And that's, I think, something that really plagued Dell Demps over the season before. So I think moving forward, Dell's going to have to ask himself a very tough question, and that is he going to make all these roster moves now, lock in guys through free agency, or is he going to say, listen, we can still trade, get rid of assets for more financial flexibility and hope we can sign other guys to our roster? I think if you were to trade Eric Gordon, one of the things that if you traded for financial flexibility, you'd basically be giving up on something that you could have had a year ago, which was just to let Eric Gordon leave. So I think what Dell Demps in trading Eric Gordon is going to try and do is he's going to want an asset in return, something that he can sell the fans and say, listen, I got this in return for Eric Gordon. Because if he doesn't, he's going to look like an absolute fool, which he's not, because he's a pretty smart guy.
So, I mean, outside of Gordon, you have Gravis Vasquez and Robin Lopez, two guys who, while they have their deficiencies, I don't think anybody would argue that for the production that they gave you this season, and then also when you factor in their age, you know, they're on really good contracts moving forward. Do you hold on to those guys, you know, while their contracts are low and get maximum value out of them that way? Or do you see an opportunity where their trade value is at their peak and you look to move them this summer?
I think in terms of trade value for both players, they're at its peak. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about these two players, because Lopez has had a fantastic season. And even though many Hornet fans like myself have been frustrated with him throughout the season, like Monty said, he was playing a role that perhaps wasn't what was intended for him in the first place. As for Vasquez, his value is at an all-time high simply because of the fact that he's putting up what every GM around and every casual fan around the league looks at is those baseline statistics of points, assists, and things like that, and field goal percentage and shooting percentages. So for both players, they've done really, really well this year. Defensively speaking, they're an absolute nightmare, and it's one of the reasons why I just can't understand why Monty Williams would want to keep these guys in the role that they currently are serving. So I think that if you're going to trade them, you're going to have to package them and get something significant in return, because Vasquez is on his rookie deal still, till 2014, and Lopez, you can pick up his options along the way. So I think it's going to be one of those situations where you can keep them on your roster, and then if you're nearing the trade deadline and something comes across your table that you like, you pick it up and say, yes, I like that deal. So I think that there's that flexibility in the future over the next year or two to play with them, so to speak, play with their contract.
So between those two players, and I mean, so we got Vasquez, who just put up, you know, his best season. Looks like he's going to win the most improved player award, which is I'm not sure I'm behind or not. He's going to win that award. He's only making, I think it's like $2 million, $2.2 million or something. I mean, it's a small amount. And then on the other hand, you got Lopez, who is a seven-footer. He's fairly mobile. He's got decent hands. He can hit his shots around the basket. He's on a contract that is much bigger, $5 million a year, but it's completely non-guaranteed. I mean, it seems to me that both of these guys, despite the fact that they've got deficiencies, their trade value should be fairly decent, wouldn't you think? Do you think you can get a solid veteran for either one of them?
I think you could if you throw in something as well. And by solid veteran, you sort of have to understand what you're going to get. I personally believe that if you're going to trade them, there's got to be upside, because the GM, if you're going to get a solid veteran in return, they're going to want upside in the asset that you're sending them. So I think that if you're sending away Lopez, for example, you're going to have to throw something in there with him, something that has got to be upside, that potential that they can, that team that's receiving can receive. Because a team that needs Robin Lopez is a team that's probably contending, you know, because he fits that. Like, $5 million a year deal fits a contending team kind of model. He's a guy that you can, a 7-footer, that you can play in certain situations, can do certain things, has deficiencies. So, I mean, I personally think that if you're going to trade away these players, you're going to have to throw something in there as well, because despite the fact that their value is so high, I still believe that teams are going to view those deficiencies with little to no upside.
So if you were to ask me, the guys, I think there's going to be a major overhaul this summer. If you were to ask me to rank the guys that I'm most positive will be here at the beginning of next year, Anthony Davis would obviously be number one on that list for me. Number two would be Jason Smith, only because obviously he's not the second best player, but Monty obviously talks about him in such high esteem. He's the leader of the team, called him the best defensive player on the team this year, and he's obviously on a good contract. But I just don't see him going anywhere, because I don't think any team would ever value him as much as we do. Do you agree with that? And if the Hornets were to trade him, what do you think that they would have to get in return in order, you know, to essentially move their team leader and glue guy?
I wouldn't trade Jason Smith. I know that it's hard to say he's untradeable, but he's exactly what the Hornets want. So if you were to trade him, you'd have to put a price tag of at least a first rounder, because first of all, he is a first rounder. He was drafted in the first round, and you know, second of all, he's such an underrated player in this league in terms of what he brings to a team. Leadership, he brings the ability to block shots. Rebounding the ball is not the greatest strength on the defensive end, but offensively he's a good rebounder. He can shoot the ball. He sets great picks. And he knows who he is one of the things that a lot of NBA players struggle with. He knows who he is. He knows what he has. And he works with it very, very well. The problem with trying to get first-round picks, obviously, is people value them way too highly because of the fact that of the rookie wage scale. So if you're going to try and get something back, you'd want a veteran who is worth a mid-level type of contract value range or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I really wouldn't see the Hornets trading him anytime soon.
So Ryan Anderson, touchable or untouchable on the trade market?
I think he's, to an extent, touchable. Because everyone is, because he's not a franchise guy. I think that his contract is excellent value, $8 million a season. You know, you heard, as soon as he started playing well, you heard all the Laker fans and Bull fans saying, oh, why don't we sign Ryan Anderson, you know, for the money that he had and all that types of things. So I think he definitely has value out there, and if you were to trade him, you'd want, if you were going to try and get another top three player on your team type of guy, because I think that that's what the Hornets see him as, is one of their best three or four players on the roster.
So, I mean, there's obviously a lot of holes to be fixed, but no team, you know, is ever going to be perfect. The Hornets might be able to fill some this off season, but in all likelihood, there's still going to be some deficiency on the roster. Are you more of the mind that you take this cap space and you just go out and get, you know, a star level player, let's say a Josh Smith or an Andre Iguodala, or would you prefer to see this team split that 15 to 20 million up between two or three guys, plus you also add in your high pick rookie, and kind of, you know, go the route of a 10, 11 deep team similar to what we've seen Denver do?
Yeah, this is tough because I think, you know, if the Hornets were to try and get one of those names that you mentioned before, they're going to have to give them a big, big contract because there's so many teams out there with so much cap space. My personal belief is that if in order to contend, you need three players basically on big contracts that can compete for a championship. So you've already got one in, well, you would hope in Anthony Davis. And then I think that after that, you would hope that the guy that you draft this year could develop into one of those guys. And then I think their original plan was to also add Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson kind of as the two players that would also complement Anthony Davis and your other franchise guy. I think that if the right player is there, the right, like a Iguodala or a Josh Smith, you do go and sign him just simply because I'm of the belief that the George Karl model will never work. I think that the NBA, despite the fact it's a team sport, has an individualistic component about it. And if the right guy is there and if you can sort of, you know, get him for the right price, then I think you need to do that if you're the Hornets.
All right, so if you had to put odds on it, and I've asked Michael this question a couple times before, when this Pelicans team takes the court next year, over under seven members of the current team still wearing a Pelicans uniform.
At the start of the season, you said?
Yep.
Okay. Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, Jason Smith, Austin Rivers, Vasquez. It's a tough one. I think it's going to be seven. I'm going to call it. I'm going to say it's bang on seven. I think that they'll probably bring back Darius Miller. Lance Thomas, I think they like. Oh, actually, maybe it'll be eight because of Brian Roberts. Yeah, I think it might be eight.
Okay, so you're taking the over.
I'm going to take the over, yeah.
Because we're going to keep this, and if you get it wrong, we're going to come back and yell at you.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
It sounds like you think they're going to keep the the top part of the roster and the bottom part, you know, of the roster, if you consider Roberts like an ideal 10th or 11th man, and then just completely overhaul positions, let's say 4 through 8. Would that be accurate?
I think that's very, very accurate, because I think that they just need some quality players, because I think Monty Williams is getting frustrated at not being able to have those guys, those role players that actually have a degree of talent comparable to the rest of the league. So I think 4 through 8 is where Dell's going to target, and I'm hoping he's smart enough not to overpay for certain guys, because if the players that are in their early 30s are the players that will get overpaid, and we've seen it time and time again with this franchise. They overpay for a player, he has injuries, or he underperforms, and it's very, very frustrating. So I'm hoping he's smart enough not to overpay for certain guys.
All right, James. Got any other guys you want to call out as as your favorite trade prospects? You think Xavier Henry is going to be traded and get us a superstar?
Well, that's, I'm hoping that's the case because he played most of the games the last couple of weeks. So I'm hoping that's what they're trying to do, up his trade value, get him to play a couple of back-to-backs.
All right, James, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Not a worry, guys. You have a good one, eh?
And now we're joined by Chris True, our local funny man and our expert on the rebrand. I got to say, at one point, I was kind of down on the Pelicans. I wasn't very excited. And then Chris put up an article on our site. That, coupled with another one I read, made me actually pretty happy with the Pelicans. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you, but also double thank you for that sweet boy thing you just said. I had no idea.
So let me ask you, so you were at the game tonight, last home game.
That's right.
For the Hornets ever. Did they take Hugo out on the court and shoot him?
Well, not when I was there. Maybe when all the lights went out. Maybe they brought him out and said, "We have one last thing for you, Hugo," and then something terrible happened. But they did. They gave away a bunch of presents, some autographed jerseys and shoes from every player. So some lucky kid out there has a pair of Brian Roberts autographed sneakers and a Lou Amundsen autographed jersey.
Wow. Did Austin Rivers give away a suit?
No, but he walked with some confidence as his right hand was wrapped underneath his suit, and his jacket didn't look like it was going to fall off a single time. Austin Rivers, confidence through the roof, you guys.
as it should be. So, I mean, this was the end of an era, end of the Hornets brand. I mean, what was I guess before we start with what's going to happen moving forward, give us your number one memory from the New Orleans Hornets era.
Ooh, well, I mean, I feel like this is not a surprise answer. It's got to be that year we all thought that we would maybe make the finals, that 2008 season. That was a lot of fun. But personally, I mean, just as someone who lives in the city and has been going to the games a lot, really every home opener, I have very fond memories for every home opener, wondering what the intro video is going to be like, what t-shirt's going to be draped over the seats. And it's a real like 12-year-old boy thing to be excited about. But that's, there's so much like positivity and just you never know what could happen type of feeling that surrounds those home openers. So my fondest memories are probably all of those combined, and I expect the home opener for the Pelicans to eclipse them all.
So the question, I'm watching these games and the crowds aren't very good. Is that a function of the of just them being a bad team this year?
I really think that it has everything to do with people just being anxious about the rebrand. And I have a ton of friends who bought season tickets for the Pelicans because they are excited about that, but they declined to go to even the game today. And they were just like, "No, I'm gonna hang out and do nothing today." And I was like, "How could you not? You're a basketball fan. You're a New Orleans fan. How could you not want to be there for the end of Hornets?" And their answer was that they are just so excited about Pelican stuff that they just kind of have checked out of this season. And I think that that's what is mostly going on, is people are just totally checked out. It's like you're breaking up with your loved one, but you also still have a couple of dates planned. So you just, it's a terrible example. This is a terrible analogy. I really do feel like people have just generally checked out, other than the diehards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Are those of us rooting for losses? But okay. So you're the self-appointed, maybe we voted on this, I don't know, but you're the self-appointed president of Pelican Nation. I think that's a great job to have, a lot of responsibility. So I'm going to start throwing some Hornets things out there that now I want you to give me the answer of how you transition them to Pelicans. I'll start off easy. So with the Hornets, we have the Hive. The Hive is now obviously gone. It's Pelicans Nation. What is the replacement?
I'm going to go. I have two answers. I think it's either Nest or Peer. Possibly Peer, because if you look at the drawings for all the renovations, it looks like there's a lot of opportunities for hanging out up on the upper deck area on the outside, much like a pier could possibly be. So Pier or Nest. The only problem with Nest being that that's what the current gift shop is, the Hornet's Nest. So maybe that will just become Pelican's Nest. That's an easy thing. But so I guess if I had to pick one, I'm going Pier.
I think I like Pier. It's better than what I was coming up with, which, you know, you always see them standing on the posts in the water, and those are called piles. So we could call it the pile.
Ooh. See, I'm fine with weird stuff like that. When people say things like pile, what that mean? And I like the idea of, like, let me put my hand over your shoulder, my friend. Let me explain to you that there's actually a reason for this. Like, I like stuff like that, even though most people who aren't following the team, who aren't from New Orleans, may have an issue with it.
Yeah. They've been playing like a pile of something. So we take I think you know, it's not necessarily Hornets related, but it's been there for a while. Other teams are starting to copy it. I think we need to start off fresh. I take out the Ric Flair. Woo! What do you replace it with?
Oh, you're lobbing me this one. People were going to think that we had previously discussed these questions, but we totally didn't. It's actually our first time ever talking to each other. Here's the answer for that. I know that TNA Impact Wrestling is not nearly as big and successful as WWE, but there's a man who is wrestling for TNA right now whose name is Mr. Anderson, and his gimmick is that every time he introduces himself to the ring, because he doesn't let the other person do it, he does it for himself, he calls himself Mr. Anderson, and then a couple beats go by, and he just says it again, Anderson. So I think after every Ryan Anderson three-point shot, the PA announcer goes, Ryan Anderson for three. And then the entire crowd goes, Anderson.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, WWE fans will know him. He had a decent stint for a couple of months. He got a bit of a push before going to TNA.
Yeah, as so. Ken Kennedy, and had the same exact gimmick.
Exactly. And then, okay, I think this has got to be the hardest one. You know, even though they haven't played much of it, the fans are used to and accustomed to saying B-fence.
All right.
Replacement.
All right. This is a very radical. Okay. Are you ready? I'm going to say, we just say defense.
No corny play on words.
Come on, we gotta have something better than that.
People are paying $2 for these tickets. Give them something,
man. Geez, the whole I think the B-fence thing has got to go. Although, I mean, I can convince myself to be on board with anything. The B-fence thing is bad. The other so if I may piggyback, other thing they should get rid of. I'm not sure if you guys have noticed this, but they play charge when we're on offense. They play, you know. You know, and the whole crowd goes, charge, while we're on offense. And I think they should stop doing that as well.
You don't like that. What would you replace it with then?
Man, I think they just replace it. Well, they got that live band now. You know, they're gutting one of the balcony behind the basket sections, and they're putting up the party perch where people – it looks like it's just a bar that looks out over the arena, and you buy a ticket to get to be in the perch, and you – get to just hang out there, and above it there's a band, and I think that you just let the band go crazy with stuff like that, just like in Staples Center for Lakers games, how they have the gal on the organ. I think you just let the brass band take it. You just let them do their thing.
Any other ideas you got? I mean, you got a mascot name for us, you got, I mean, anything. How, I mean, you're the president, Pelican Nation.
I think that the mascot, you have a big decision to make here. You either go Hugo, you just keep it there and surprise everyone, or you go Seymour, who was the name of the Pelican from the 1984 World's Fair, which was held in New Orleans, which is still a symbol that you see around the city, the 84 World's Fair. That Pelican's name was Seymour. I think you go one of those things. I think that the honeybees are clearly renamed the Fly Girls.
Oh, that's a gimme.
Although you may recall, I think we had this discussion on an email thread, but at a Chalk Talk with Del Demps, the last question that was asked to him was, what's the honeybees, what's their new name? And he laughed, and he was like, why does everyone keep asking me that? People continue to ask me that, even on the streets. And then he said that there was going to be some sort of fan interaction for all those names. So people have that to look forward to.
Well, up in the stands, there's the Bee-Zanies. Are they going to be now called the Peckers?
Peckerheads?
Right, something like that.
Yeah, why not, man?
Because you guys have to start coming up with those. They got to replace the whole Bee-Zany section.
I know.
There's a lot of work to be done.
Well, the Bee-Zany section, probably, I think if they were smart, they would do something with the sponsor, which I believe right now is Zatarain's. So, I mean, it could just they could just be as simple as, like, the seasoned section, I mean, that's not super, super awesome, but it could be something that just ties into the actual sponsor, something really simple.
All right, so just in a vacuum, someone came to you with, and you had never heard of either of them, and they put those two logos in front of you, the Hornets with the Fleur de Bee and the new Pelicans logo. Which one do you like better?
Well, I out of those two, I think the Florida B is probably better than the Florida P, I believe is what they're calling it.
Right.
But that said, I still, I'm a sucker for the entire rebrand, all the logos, the secondary and the alt logos. I love them all, and I think that the number one complaint I've heard about the Florida P. Is that the Pelican's head looks like it's swished in to the Fort Lee, but it's the same size as the normal logo. So, I'm on board. Go buy a.
I actually really like the way the Pelican looks. I think it just looks vicious. I mean, something about the eyes.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to come and kill you.
And do you guys notice the subtle crescent moon in the logo?
Yeah.
Okay. Some people, I'm surprised some people haven't, so I bring it up.
So let me ask you this, but this is both on a personal level and on a national level. So today I was writing some articles that are going to come out after the season's over, and I don't know how many times I wrote Hornets, had to go back, change it to Pelicans. On a personal kind of more micro level, how long do you think it takes for all of us where it's just, first nature, where we're just saying New Orleans Pelicans, Hornets is completely out of our heads. We never have that slip. And then my second question would be, how about on a national level? Because, the Charlotte Hornets were dead in 2002, yet you'll still find the occasional article calling us the Charlotte Hornets. You'll see SportsCenter slip up, even in NBA 2K12, I believe it was. The announcers continually called you the Charlotte Hornets. Give me an answer on those two. Just for us everyday Hornets lovers and fans, when does it just become, we don't even think of the Hornets anymore, we automatically spat off New Orleans Pelicans, and then on a national level, when do you think that becomes the norm?
I think for locals, it's going to have to be probably the second year for it to be a 100% thing, but because here in New Orleans, I expect there to be Pelican stuff everywhere. Like when you're at the downtown areas, when they put the little flags that are on the stoplights and stuff like that. I mean, we're going to be hit with all those things so often, and so I think locally it'll be a little bit faster, but nationally, I expect this first year for everyone to absolutely joke around about accidentally calling us the Hornets, which will be ironic because they've been wrong about our name so often for so long anyway. So I think that probably 2015 is going to be, the season after this one is going to be when people are totally over it, and it's going to feel weird to look at your Hornets jersey in your closet.
And if you had your preference, would you prefer that Charlotte take back the Hornets, or would you like to see that name die forever?
Man, I think any time you can name your team after the guy who owns the team at some point, like Bob Katz, you got to stick with it and own up to it. So but for real, I hope they don't ever. I hope Charlotte doesn't get it back. If they do, then I'm not going to cry about it. But I just think it's going to make things even more confusing. Like when you look at the NBA history books, and I feel like people, I feel like Stern wouldn't let that happen on his watch, or maybe he doesn't give a shit. Maybe he'll just do it and act like it's the next guy's problem. You know?
Right. Adam Silver gets to deal with it. So if they do take back the Hornets, though. How many times do you think we're going to hear somebody call them the Charlotte Pelicans?
Oh, jeez.
I honestly expect it will happen.
Oh, I absolutely think it's going to happen. And, you know, hopefully, you know, if we're going to think positive about this whole thing. Hopefully we just get a really awesome rivalry going with Charlotte. And, you know, like Kid Gilchrist and Davis can have a nice rivalry and hopefully they get good, and we know that we're going to be pretty good, and maybe this whole thing can just result in a fun Lakers-Celtics type of thing, right?
Right.
I'm thinking real positively over here.
Right, because the odds of the Pelicans and the Bobcats being in the finals 3 years in a row was pretty good.
Hey, man, don't kill my dreams.
So thanks, Chris, for coming on, and I'm sure we'll be coming back later when some more of these Pelicans things are revealed to get your take on them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to everything, and keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.